What I believe you're telling me is the more times I can get people to come into my store, the better chance of building a relationship with them I will have.
That's
is that
correct.
True?
Absolutely so.
And if I can build relationship equals trust equals loyalty, which all the studies that I do and have done means more revenue and more profit.
Everybody wants to be, feel, be part of something special and enjoyable. As enjoyable as you can make it based on the kind of product or service you sell. The more you make people special, the more special you are to them. The key to all business, and we're talking about retail, but it's very important to me that we broaden it because this applies to wholesale, service, technical, manufacturing, aerospace. It's all about relationships. What people don't realize is that a customer is not just a widget buyer. It's a man or a woman with hopes and dreams and fears and hobbies and problems and excitements and agonies and ecstasies and children. And the more you recognize and respect and acknowledge those issues, the tighter the bond, the tighter the trust, the more substantial the transaction, the more frequent the transaction.
Okay, I'm going to suggest to you, I buy on to those three ways to grow a business. But I think there's another wonderful direct benefit from the things you talked about. And let's go back and talk about what you talked about. It's retaining customers,
yep,
and the whole notion of adding customers, building a greater transaction value, getting frequency of customers coming back, which means if you do those three things well, you are developing happy customers. If you're developing happy customers, what's the greatest advertising that a company can have?
You're absolutely right. And it's the greatest leverage a company can have because unless you've got unlimited budgets, you can only afford a finite amount of advertising. You can only afford a finite amount of sales personnel. But if you turn every one of your customers or clients into a continual 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 52-week-a-year sales force for you, they can get into people's minds and locations that no advertisement, no salesperson
That's
will
right.
ever access.
Because happy customers telling other people about their experience, which we all do, is the best form of advertising any business can possibly have.
And today, in today's society, it's the most powerful, intangible asset every enterprise possesses if you respect it and utilize it. But there's one more thing. Happy customers will breed happy business owners and professionals. And one of the biggest areas of concern I have today is how many entrepreneurs, how many business owners, managers, and professionals are ambivalent or apathetic. And they don't have to be because you can actually become beloved by your customers, have them thoroughly enjoy you, what you stand for, your business, and it's one simple distinction. The biggest mistake almost everybody has made is they've fallen in love with their business instead of their customers. If you stop worrying about being the fastest growing business, if you stop being all excited about your technical process, if instead you refocus on how much value your company can add and is adding to somebody's business or life, and you see in your mind those lives very realistically being expanded and improved upon and enriched, you get so much more joy that it makes the process of going to work more exciting. And that may not sound important, but believe me, today when quality of life issues are becoming 10 times more important than just making money issues, this is a key element.
All right, let me ask you this. Here's one that came to me when I made a speech to a Best Western Hotel franchisees. And this one franchisee came to me and asked the question. He says, do you think there's ever a time when you need to dismiss a customer?
Yes, Fran, I think there are four very, very real situations where that's very appropriate.
Help me.
Well, the first one is when that customer is stealing from the well-being of all the rest of the customers you
okay.
want to serve. You and I were talking earlier about a restaurant where somebody is being obnoxious, smoking, belligerent, disruptive. He or she is not basically contributing to the experience for everyone else. They're stealing from it,
okay.
and it's not fair.
That's fair.
The second situation is when you cannot respect the customer enough to give them the fullest extent or potential of value or result that you're capable. And those things happen. Personality, sure. Qualms, they happen.
They happen.
And the third reason is because I treasure that customer so much that I know if I don't have the product or service he needs, I'm going to send him somewhere else where he can get it.
Even to your competitor?
Definitely to my competitor. Whatever's going to serve that customer the best.
Boy, that's powerful. That's really powerful.
There's a fourth reason.
Okay.
When the customer can't appreciate adequately enough the value or the benefit or the advantage you're bringing to him or her. You may be bringing an incredible advantage, but if they don't see it, they're not going to really appreciate it. If they don't appreciate it, they're not going to really get the value you're capable of, and that's when you should probably introduce them to someone else. There's a great story.
Yes.
I have a dentist from Australia. He tripled his entire practice when he decided that there were certain segments of his patient base that didn't appreciate him. They kept coming to him, but they didn't appreciate what he was doing. They didn't treasure their oral hygiene. They didn't treasure the cosmetic beauty of their mouth. They didn't do any of that. And yet they came when they had a cavity. They came when they had pain. He didn't feel like he connected well enough that they appreciated him and he could appreciate them. And so he suggested to these people that they go to one of his colleagues. And he replaced them with people who did appreciate the value that he offered. And his practice grew because those people kept their appointments, used more of his services, and referred like mad.
You know what you're talking about here? You're talking about credibility, are you not?
Yes. Well, I'm also talking about knowing who you are and what you're all about and delivering it, not only for your customer, but for yourself.
You're talking about credibility. You're talking about doing what you said you're going to do. And if you can't do what you say you're going to do, and you can't have this mutual respect, then you ought to nicely and politely show them another avenue, another way that they may get fulfilled better than they are.
I think I'm also talking about respecting yourself for doing it.
Why are some businesses just 10 times more successful than another business in the same field, in the same relative location?
It's really simple, Fran. Those businesses understand how to telegraph to their customers exactly what's in it for the customer, the self-serving advantage the customer gets. By buying from them instead of buying from their competition. Simple.
Give me an example.
You know when Federal Express first came out and they said, when it absolutely, positively has to be there overnight by 10:30 FedEx?
Yes.
Well, I call that a unique selling proposition or a USP, and it's a fundamental in the way I teach companies to market and transact business, to position them to gain advantage and be 10 or 100 times more successful than their competitors.
Uh-huh.
Or the way Avis came out and said, when you're number two, you have to try harder.
Yeah.
Or when Domino's first came out and they said, hot, delicious, fresh pizza delivered to your door in 30 minutes or it's yours free.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's called the unique selling proposition, and it clearly conveys to a customer the superior benefit and advantage they get from dealing with you over your competition. It's instant and evident. That's what I'm talking about. The clearer and the more powerfully you can convey to a customer, hey, here's all the things you get, you, not me, you get from dealing with me that you don't get from dealing with my competition, then it's peremptory, isn't it?
That's fascinating because you've covered the Federal Express packages, delivering packages, simple. Pizza. Everybody sells pizza. But you're right. They did give me a whole different, clear message that was simple, didn't
they? What's in it for me? You got to realize, and this is a very big realization, a profound revelation for many people, and that is customers don't care about what's in it for you. All they care about is what's in it for me, the customer.
Okay, Jay, you gave me four examples. I'm going to ask you this again. The people listening to this conversation have got thousands of different types of businesses. Does this principle hold up to all of those or just to those four you mentioned?
The unique selling proposition is one of 21 principles that I call my power principles. I have identified and uncovered them after studying and evaluating and examining over 10,000 very, very successful enterprises. Companies that by and large were between 3 and 10 times more successful than their counterparts in their industry. These are universal. These are methods, concepts, and principles that will apply and endure in virtually any kind of enterprise, retail, wholesale, large, small, high-tech, low-tech, direct selling, indirect selling. They are universal. They will work for virtually any enterprise or practice anywhere in this country or in any free enterprise nation in the world.
All right, Jay, I know personally of so many businesses that you've helped grow. If you would, give us an example of a few of the businesses that you've helped to dramatically grow their revenue, their profits.
Okay, I'll give you a few examples, but I'll also, Fran, try to identify the key fundamental in that example that anybody can take instant advantage of in their own enterprise.
Okay?
I'll tell you the story of George Culp because it's pretty fascinating. George Culp was an attendee to one of my training programs. He came to an expense of a $20,000 one. He had a lumber...
Wait a minute. George Culp paid $20,000 to come to a training program.
Uh-huh. He came to one of my five-day $20,000 training programs. That's my middle-range one.
That's phenomenal because, you know, people just don't get that kind of money. So the value must be there. They wouldn't spend it over and over again. This is terrific. Yeah. Tell me.
I had 1,000 people that came to that program. It was a wonderful program. Anyhow, George came looking for a breakthrough. He had a lumber mill, and the lumber mill had a real problem. Because of weight considerations, there was only a very limited geography they could sell to. If I gave you lumber for free, but my lumber came from New York, it would cost you more to get it here shipped, even if there's no cost for the lumber, than it would to buy it from a local mill. So George had a very small, limited area he could market to, and he had about 90% distribution in his target area. He came to me looking for a breakthrough. How could he add more revenue? How could he find more profit in a business that was pretty much matured and saturated?
I would say so. 90% penetration. Wouldn't any business like to have that?
I found him a breakthrough, $1.5 million breakthrough.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how.
It was pretty interesting. I systematically had George identify and examine all the processes he had developed in the lumber mill business, what they did better than other lumber mills around the country and around the world. And what I found out was that he did a number of things better, but he did one thing incredibly better. He had perfected, developed, and refined a system of what's called kiln drying. This is the process of taking trees.
Kiln. You're talking about K-I-L-N?
K-I-L-N. You take the
drying.
Trees,
okay.
You turn them into boards. The boards are green. They're wet. You put them in a kiln, which is a big room with heat and temperature control, and the lumber goes through very slow. And in a period of a certain number of minutes or hours, it is turned into high-grade boards that are used in the manufacturing community. Depending upon the way it is dried and the precision and the preciseness of heat and lack of humidity, that raw timber can end up being double A grade, B grade, or reject. The difference between reject and double A is millions and millions and millions of dollars for the lumber mill.
Yeah.
Well, George developed and created a system of kiln drying that did three interesting things. Number one, produced the highest possible incidence of double A grading. B, the lowest incidence of rejects, scrap, or seconds, meaning undesired board. And he was able to do it with the lowest level of energy consumption of any lumber mill in the area. All total, between the increased quality of board feed he produced, the lowered level of rejects he created, and the reduction of energy, he saved something like $3 million a year for his own lumber mill. When he presented those facts to me...
So wait a minute. He reduced his costs by $3 million? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, he reduced his costs by approximately $500,000. He improved the value or the premium he could get for his product by another $1 million.
I see.
And he eliminated waste, which is an improvement in cost, by the difference. But it was $3
million
total.
$3 million in aggregate, okay.
For his
Amazing.
Small lumber mill. I said, George, how many other lumber mills are there in the country, in the world? He said, a lot. I said, how many would like to save $3 million? Or more? Or less? He said, a lot. I said, why don't you teach your system to them? And you could teach it to them either for a fee, for a percentage of the savings. You could sell it to them. You could lease it to them. You could rent it to them. That was the beginning of an idea. And from that idea, George progressed. The first thing he did was a school. He sold out the school for $3,000 per attendant. People like Weyerhaeuser came. All kinds of mills came. He taught him his system. I said, George, You can save somebody $3 million and you're only charging $3,000. Too low. He went back to the drawing board. He raised it to $8,000. Filled it again. Came back. I said, well, if you keep filling it, it means you're charging too low. So he finally got it to $25,000. Added a little bit of bells and whistles where he goes on site. And the last one he did, he filled up. So far, he's added $1.5 million worth of net profit. And every year he does one. And every year he makes about $500,000 as a profit center. I've convinced him to now look at other processes that he's never identified that he does better than his competitors, turn those into systems he can license, rent, lease, sell, and his target is to make $5 million a year just by recycling systems he's created for his own application to other companies and other mills outside his marketing area that are not competitors, that can't hurt him at all. In other words, what does it matter if you're 500 or 5,000 miles away if I teach you my secrets? You're not a competitor of mine. You never will be. You can't be unless you can figure out how to put helium in the board and ship it.
Amazing.
So that's one system. So I have a philosophy that within your company, you almost always do something in either the manufacturing, the operating, the selling, or all three of those areas better than your generic competitors, better than everyone else in your industry. Not just your direct competition, but people in related. Maybe you're a distributor and you figured a way to manage inventory with lower capital outlay, or to manage it with less people, or manage it with less loss or breakage. Well, there's probably 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 other distribution companies in this country around the world who would pay through the nose to learn how to do that. I had a car wash one time, for example, that had developed a system of selling customers the hot wax additive, the bonus.
Yeah.
And they got something like 3 times more people to take it than the normal car wash. And when I heard that, I said, why don't you sell that process, the selling mechanism, what you say and how you do it to every other car wash in the country? They never thought about that. They did it, and they started making more money every month from the licensing of their sales technique for increasing hot waxes in a car wash than they did from their whole car wash.
Sure, because they were limited. They could only have so many cars come through the car wash.
I've done this with hundreds of
amazing.
So almost every company has some aspect, some process, some way of doing things, some system they've created for their own internal use that they've never recognized is superior. A lot of companies who are really good marketers will create an ad, for example. They'll run it for a year. It'll be great. They'll succeed, and then it'll wear out. And it'll just basically, they'll file it away. I've gotten companies to take their old ads and license them to people outside their competitive area and make millions of dollars reselling their ads or selling systems. That there's just a spectrum of different ways people have developed for selling, supplying, distributing, managing, producing things more effectively, efficiently, productively, cost-effectively, or profitably. I teach people how to turn that into a profit center and get streams of income forever from even your competitors, more so than you make from your own business. But that's one non-traditional approach.
Okay.
Can I give you another one, Fran?
Sure, please.
I don't think we've ever talked about this. I had a really interesting success with a company that manufactured a product called IcyHot, I-C-Y-H-O-T. It's an analgesic balm, a glop of gelatinous goop like Bengay or mentholatum. You rub it on your joints or your arms, and it treats arthritis, bursitis, pain, muscle strain, etc. And the company desperately wanted to grow, but they had no marketing budget. They had no advertising budget. They had no sales budget. They had no money.
Most of us don't.
Well,
I want to advertise, but I don't have any money to advertise.
Most people get stymied or they get stopped here. We didn't. We decided, well, if we don't have money, let's not pay for advertising. Let's pay for customers. Let's pay for results instead of advertising. We made a mind shift, a paradigm shift.
It's kind of clever.
Oh, it's what you'd say, stepping outside the box.
Sure.
I said, let's look at what we know about customers. And most people never look at this. I said, what do you know about your customers? What is their buying pattern? In other words, what are what I call the marginal net worth or the lifetime buying dynamics? By that I mean, if you bring 100 new customers in, worst case, how much will they spend initially on whatever they buy? And then how many more times a year? And then how many subsequent years will they keep rebuying from you?
Okay.
And all total, when it all settles, what's it worth? No one ever looks at that.
No.
But until you look at that, you don't really know what or how much you can afford to spend in the first place to bring that first customer or sale in the door. Well, we looked at it and we found to our fascination that every time we brought 100 customers in, something like 70 of them bought from us six more times a year for life, Fran, or until somebody came up with a cure for arthritis or bursitis, or until they died, literally. So we saw the product sold for $3. It cost us approximately 45 cents to manufacture and ship out. Didn't have a lot of chemical cost in it.
Yeah.
It was a very fine product, but it just didn't cost a lot. We got the idea of going to radio stations, television stations, newspapers, magazines, all kinds of advertising media, and not paying for advertising, but instead saying, if you want to sell this product for $3, you can keep 100%. No one had ever done that. They thought we were crazy. But
now, wait a minute. Do that again. You went to radio stations, and you went to newspapers, and you...
And TV stations, and we said, the product sells for $3.
Wow.
If you'll sell it for us, Fran, keep 100% of the $3. Just send us the name right away so we can ship the product out and make sure the customer gets the satisfaction and the relief they want. Everyone thought we were crazy, but we knew every time we spent or invested, remember, the real cost was 45 cents.
Yeah.
Every time we spent 45 cents on 100 people, 70% of those people would come back and buy six jars a year at $3 for life. So every 45 cent investment we made returned whatever 70% of $18 a year for life, and we made millions of dollars. And in a mere 18 months, that $20,000 a year business was doing $13 million. We didn't pay a dime for advertising. We paid only for results. Although, in spite of that, we got something like $18 million worth of free advertising the first year we did it that we never paid for. We accidentally forced retail distribution. You know what that means.
Yes.
We start off being a mail order company. We had so much free advertising that drugstores, grocery stores, wholesale chains begged us to let them distribute it through retail. It got so big in retail that G.D. Searle, the pharmaceutical company that used to be in Chicago, bought the company for tens of millions of dollars, all because we didn't have a dime to advertise. So we decided we weren't going to be thwarted. We were not going to pay for advertising. We would pay for results. So we said, what do we know about the buying patterns of our customers? And when we realized that every time we invested 45 cents, we got a return of approximately $18 a year for life, $18 that was about 80% pure profit, we realized that even if we didn't have the money, all we had to do was finance the first purchases, and everything else would work out itself, and it did.
There's so many brilliant notions in there, but the first one is you didn't let lack of funds keep you from being successful.
No, it motivated us to find. See, I look at what's possible, not what's impossible.
Yeah, no, I love this. Because most of our listeners out there, they don't have a lot of funds. They're not Coca-Cola Company. They're not Home Depot. They cannot go and advertise. And so often we say, oh my goodness, you know, I don't have the funds, the money to really market my product like I can. But you did not let that stop you.
Well, in fact, I'll tell you another twist on it. I'll tell you how we tripled another company's business in a handful of months with the same basic philosophy but applied to a whole different kind of industry.
Tell me.
Okay, well, I just told you about the mail order.
Yeah.
The mail order patent medicine business. Now, how about the fluid transmission business? You know what that is?
No, tell me.
Fluid transmission is PVC pipe, big plastic pipes you'll see in manufacturing and agriculture that carries fluid. Well, a company came to me that sold fluid transmission products in California, and they were desperate for a breakthrough. But they didn't have much money either, and they also didn't manage their sales force worth a darn. I said, first of all, what do you know about the buying patterns of your customers? This is a standard J. Abraham question, and everyone listening to this tape, what do you know about the buying patterns of your customers?
Boy, that's so fundamentally sound. That's great.
They didn't know anything. So yeah. I said, go back to your office, analyze it, come back when you're ready. Week and a half later, they came back, and they said, well, this was fascinating. And I said, well, what did you discover? I'm not going to tell you about gross sales because that's not important. I'll tell you about profit. They said that every time they got a new customer, worst case, not best, but worst case, worst thing happened, they made $200 on the first sale. Of the $200, they paid their salespeople 10%. So the salesman or woman got 20 of the two, the house, meaning this company, got 180.
Right.
Worst case, every time they got a new customer, that customer would buy five more times a year. And worst case, it would be $200 profit again. So worst case, they'd get $1,000 worth of profit in the first year for every new customer they brought in. Also worst case, they analyzed the average new customer stayed at very least, not most, at very least 3 years. So what they knew was the first time any new customer bought, not best case, because sometimes they'd get $10,000 of profit, but worst case, $200. Worst case, not best, every new customer would buy five times a year for $200. So it was worth $1,000 a year, and worst case, they would stay 3 years. So every new customer they got in the door was worth $3,000. The salesman or woman was making 10% of profit, $20 on that first $200 profit sale. I said, problem simple, I can give you a breakthrough in about 2 or 3 months, but it'll take me 2 minutes. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, all you got to do is this. Go to your sales force and make a deal with them. And the deal will look like this. As long as the sales force will maintain their sales production levels from their existing customer bases, meaning if they've been averaging $40,000 a salesperson a month from their existing customers, as long as it doesn't drop below that level, give them 100% of the profit on every new customer they bring in. They got up in arms. They said, well, we can't do that. We can't give away $180 on a $200 sale. And I said, you're looking at it wrong. Every time you invest, not give away $180, you are 10 times more motivating that salesperson to bring that new customer in. And that $180 investment is going to accrue for you 90% of the $2,800 in additional profit you never would have had. Make sense?
It makes sense from this standpoint, too, because they're not losing money. What they're doing is giving the profits on the first customer, if I'm clear here, to the salesperson. So they're breaking even.
But they're motivating right. That salesperson. Right. The salesperson is 10 times more motivated to bring a new customer in.
Absolutely.
In three months' time, their business more than tripled.
Yeah.
And I've done this over and over again. It will apply to everyone listening because everyone has buying patterns that exist with their customer or client. And when they realize what those patterns are, then and only then can they really know what they can afford to invest, not spend, but invest in either advertising or sales commissions or promotions or other items you add to the sale. It really amazes me, Fran. Almost no company has a real correlation. They'll say, well, we've got a 3% of sale budget, or we've got a $20,000 a month advertising allowance, or we'll pay our salespeople 3% commission. And I'll say, well, what's that based on? And they'll look at me like, what do you mean? And I'll say, well, maybe you should be paying them 10% on the first sale and 2% on the second. Maybe you should be throwing $400 worth of other items the first time to get a customer and not making a dime because you'll get 20 times more customers and those customers buy 5 more times a year from you forever and you're going to make $10 million more on the backside. But no one looks at it that way.
You know what I like about this? This is not rocket science.
Well, it's so simple.
You don't have to go to Harvard to get an MBA to get this. This is common sense. This is thinking your business and logical. But you know what's nice? You're the catalyst for this. Because I wouldn't have thought of this if you hadn't have brought it up. But I want more of these ideas, Jay. I want more of these ideas.
Well, let me give you a couple more. By day, I work three ways. I either basically fund things and take the lion's share of the profit. I get paid $3,000 an hour. Or I put on $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. We're working on a $50,000 training program.
This is not soft stuff. This is real ideas that I can go and take that idea and I can generate more customers, retain customers, generate more revenue and profit. I mean, that's what I like about this. I can see the value of my investment here. All right, one last thing here I want to ask you because I've heard you talk about this before and I think it's so right on and it's one of the more powerful things that you do and expand on, and that is, there's not just one way to sell or market a product, is it? You look at multiple ways. You've touched on it a little bit, but multiple ways of distribution, of selling, and you have a name for it, and you call it your... Tell me
well,
what...
You're touching on three very, very close to my heart issues. One is you're talking about the diving board and the Parthenon. Then you're talking about basically borrowing success practices from other fields. I'm very lucky. I've been involved in 400 unrelated industries. And when I looked at him, something very troubling and exciting. It's like this, the concept, you know, the Chinese concept of crisis. It's danger and opportunity.
Yes.
On both sides. Well, the same thing, troubling and exciting, became evident to me. Whenever I looked at a business, if I looked at ABC industry, the dental industry, the manufacturing industry, the distribution industry, almost everybody competing in it did things the very same way. Some were better, some were worse, but the selling systems, the approach, they were all the same. There was no innovation. And that's the way most people in most single industries all function. You learn to generate sales. You learn to create customers. You learn to resell them by following or modeling or observing or being taught the approach, the mindset that your competitors, the people you either tried to emulate or learn from or work for did, but it's in no way, shape, or form necessarily the best, the most effective, the most powerful. Now going to my theory.
But it was the easiest.
Not even the easiest. Okay. Oftentimes, yeah. It's far harder and far less productive and far more expensive, but it's what you learned. It's all your industry knows. Now,
but what I mean by easy, you didn't have to think about it.
It was a no-brainer.
It was a no-brainer.
Yeah, although it probably cost you dearly.
Yeah, okay.
But so that spawned my philosophy that almost everybody has built their business on what I call the diving board. There's one primary customer-generating process, procedure, approach that is almost the whole dependency of the business is predicated on it. And the business base, all the revenue, the foundation of the business, which is what I look at as the diving board, is being supported on one very delicate pole. A diving board is not the most efficient way to operate your business. I try to get all my clients to think in terms of the Parthenon. Think in terms of the Greek structure, the Parthenon, with all the pillars. There are, as I said earlier in this discussion, there are probably 200 better options I could give you if I had time today for growing customers, for increasing the size of the order, for improving the number of times a customer buys from you. If you find the five or six in each category that work better, more effectively, more productively, more profitably, with less downside risk, with less people, with less time or effort, and you put three or four or five together at work, two really wonderful things happen, friend. Number one, you hedge your company from danger. No one can ever compromise the source of your revenue base because it's so broad and solid. Number two, you move yourself from working on the arithmetic of your business to working on the geometry. And when you work on the geometry, that's when you grow your profits and your sales exponentially. I think I told you earlier, maybe I didn't. It costs a company the same amount of time and the same amount of effort if they send out a sales force to call on people, whether that sales force closes 1 out of 20 people called on.
The cost is the same.
Cost the same. Run a full-page ad, costs the same $10,000, $20,000, whether it pulls 10 customers, 110. You sell customers, cost you the same effort, whether that customer buys $100 initially or $200. Get a new customer, cost you the same effort, whether that customer buys once and never returns, or whether he or she buys once a month or once a week for life. My focus, my fixation, if you want to talk about my fanaticism, is I refuse to allow people in business or professional practice to settle for anything less than the fullest yield, the fullest profit, the fullest productivity, the fullest result that their efforts, their time, their commitment to their business and their customer or client base entitles them to.
All right, let me see if I can narrow this down to where I can take an idea and go with it. What you're telling me, if I've got a product or service, there are multiple ways to market and sell that product. It might be a direct sales force. It might not be. It might be a telemarketing team. It may not be. It may be direct mail. It may be some advertising situation I can do through newspapers and magazines or whatever. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, and different approaches or different methods can access different markets. For example, let's say you have a field sales force, and it costs you $200 a call to go call on a prospective customer. Well, you can't justify calling on companies that are too small. But you could if you added either a telephone selling department, or if you added a direct mail selling department, or if you made strategic alliances with all kinds of other companies who have salespeople calling on those firms anyhow.
Bingo.
So I teach people to find the most strategic combination of methods to give them what I call the optimum, the maximum result possible for the effort and the commitment.
Or the most efficient.
That's right.
And what I think you're telling me is there are just multiplicity of ways to market and sell one's product.
Yes, and each person's situation is unique. And so you've got to find the best combination for you. And your best approach may not be the same as mine. But you may not want to do something even though it's more efficient because you don't want to manage salespeople. So I teach you to find the perfect combination for what you want, because a lot of people don't want the time, the management hassles, the money hassles. Some people only want to work 4 hours a day. Others don't mind working 12, but they want to get three or four times the result they're getting now. I teach people how to come up with the exact strategy to give them what they want for themselves. I call it an optimum business strategy.
Are all these strategies going to work?
Yes and no. They're going to work for different people. I teach you how to pre-validate, to pre-test everything and anything you're considering doing before you ever mortgage the farm. In other words, I can teach you how to find out very quickly, very easily, very, very low risk or no risk, exactly how a various concept, method, approach, strategy will work or not work for you, so that you only concentrate your time and effort on the biggest winners for you.
So in other words, though, to find that out, you've got to go try things, but you've got to try things in some systematic way with some testing so you don't bet the farm on each one. But through the testing process, I think I'm hearing you say it's going to lead you to really tremendous sales growth.
Absolutely, friend. You are capable, as is anyone else listening to this conversation capable, of becoming a selling, a customer building, a business growth, and a marketing genius just by understanding how to pre-test suppositions, pre-test ideas and applications before you have to commit major time, effort, or money or people to them. Find the best producing ones, concentrate on those, put those in your stable, and basically you hitch those horses to your business or your practice, and you end up lapping the field, not just once, but over and over again.
You know, there's so many of us in business that are really tired. We're frustrated. We're making a living, but we're not doing near as well as we thought we could do. And it seems like to me that by doing some of these things, we're going to maximize our businesses, maximize our potential. And it seems when we do that, don't we have a greater fulfillment of ourselves, that we really are creating something really good, that we're being creative, we're being innovative. And when I do that, I feel better about myself. I mean, I feel good. I feel inwardly better, and I can relate better to my family and to other people. I've got a much better level of fulfillment from this kind of success.
Well, one of the most wonderful byproducts, and I stumbled across this when I started examining all the very successful enterprises and all the different industry I'd worked with. The people who achieve the highest levels of successes, the men and women who made the most amount of money and the greatest impact in their industries, were having the most fun. They
Yes.
were doing things at a level of accomplishment, innovation, connection with their customers, with their vendors.
Jay, what you're really talking about here is dynamic change. Now, you're talking about me changing how I do things. But that's okay, isn't it? Because if I don't change how I'm doing things, then I'm going to stagnate, am I not? I'm just going to idle there, and I'm not going to have this dynamic growth. My brain isn't going to be working enough. I'm not going to be energized like you're telling me I can be. Is that right?
It is right, friend. But almost something even more important happens. When you become a continuous generator of great ideas, when you become a continuous innovator, when you get connected at the deep levels, you can't help but get connected when you follow the system with your customers, with your team members,
yes,
with your vendors. The whole process, the game of business changes, and you're the one making the rules. The reason people today are so tired is because society and the system and competition is trying to relegate us all to being a commodity. And from my vantage point, you're the one that owns the business. You're the one who decided to go into professional practice. You're the one that's got to spend the rest of your life and has spent this much of your life. You owe it to yourself to get every ounce of fulfillment, achievement, prosperity, impact, and innovation out of every day you spend, every dollar you invest, every person you contact. This approach, this philosophy, this mindset, it regenerates you, Fran. It exhilarates you. It inspires you.
Even if I'm 60 years old or 70 years old, can I learn these new things? Can I get that same satisfaction even at my age?
Well, one of my proudest accomplishments as a man who founded the 27th, I think, largest public accounting firm in America. It's in Chicago. And at age 65, when it was time for him to retire, he came to one of my $25,000 programs, immediately used the information to double the revenue he was receiving from his accounting practice in his last year before he retired, and got excited about starting 20 new enterprises, and he's having the time of his life. I've had, believe it or not, I think 280 at last count, men and women over age 65 come to my live programs. We've had people start new careers. We've had a man that came who was in the health food business who quadrupled his business in his 68th year. You know, if you're hell-bent on being a cantankerous curmudgeon, you might have to work a little bit harder to break yourself of your bad habit. But almost any man or woman who really wants to have fun, who really wants to be happy, who really wants to be fulfilled, who wants to look forward to Monday morning, unless you really don't read it and follow it, you can't help but have an incredible adventure and experience if you follow what I teach in this newsletter, friend. People routinely stand up in my training programs and seminars and tell me how their whole family life has improved, how they look forward to going to work on Monday mornings, how there's no differentiation anymore between work and play because work is play. The only thing that's heart-wrenching for me, and it's really saddening, but I'm glad I can make the contribution, but it's not uncommon for men and women to say, I only wish I'd learned this when I was in my 40s. I think 540 or 50 MBAs and PhDs from the finest universities in the world have come to my programs because they wanted to learn the unique approach to business I've been able to discover. And the nicest thing about it, so you don't think I'm this brilliant guy all by myself, is I don't see myself as anything more than an emissary. I've had the good fortune of being influenced, impacted, tutored, mentored, exposed to some of the greatest minds alive and deceased, and I've studied them, and I've identified them, and I've isolated what made them great, and what made their enterprises great, and what made their philosophies and their strategies on business and life great, and I've been able to combine them into some really simple, and more importantly, easy-to-utilize strategies that I share and teach and illustrate. And the key is illustration, friend, because if I tell you something theoretically, it's of no use to you. You have to see how it works in other people's business, then you have to see how it works in your business, and then you have to see questions and comments from other people who either don't understand it or do and have applied it, so that you have the full comprehension of all the components and how it all ties together.
Jay, so many of my friends out there in business feel stagnated. They feel like they're in a rut. They're working hard. I mean, they're working long hours and they're working weekends. They don't have time for their families, and they want to have time for their families. They don't have time to take trips, to share with their friends, to have time for their friends. They work, 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 and they don't seem to be going anywhere. Are you telling me that through this information that you've got, that this can change?
Fran, I know it can change. I've got 2,000 testimonials from men and women all over the world, not just America, in Australia, in England, in Singapore, in every state in this wonderful nation, who cite for me how their lives improved, how their fates and their fortunes grew, how their time with their family became more enriched because they applied, not even all, a few of the best, most appropriate examples. All you have to do is be willing to embrace a small shift in the way you look at your business, your life, your relationship with your customers, and be willing to do some really neat things. Spend less time, less effort, less money, and have a lot more fun. If you're not willing to do that, I probably can't help you.
Well, let me tell you, Jay Abraham, I know that you can help these people that are our friends that are listening to us today, and help me, because I have seen you help so many people in real terms of being able to grow their businesses, create more revenues, create more profits, and have a better life and be in control of their life. I know that you can do that, and I thank you for sharing these moments with us.
Thanks a lot, Fred.